Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter and Pete Musto. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a new report says the sport of tennis faces very significant problems with integrity. The report said the problems involving issues like fair play and honesty are most notable at the lower levels of the sport. It said a major cause was a sharp increase in internet betting, with some players winning money by losing to their opponents on purpose. The interim report of the Independent Review of Integrity was released after a 2-year independent investigation. It said that investigators had not found widespread corruption at the highest levels of tennis worldwide, but it did find that there is evidence of some issues at these levels. The report offered suggestions for dealing with those issues. One idea is a proposal to study how tennis players are paid. Currently, payments are based on appearances in tennis events. The report also proposed a study of the current system for rating players, and it called for closer examination of the lower levels of tennis. The review was ordered by major bodies of the sport in 2016. They acted following a report by the British Broadcasting Company and BuzzFeed News. The report claimed that 16 of the world's top 50 players were suspected of purposefully losing to other players. The report said the problems are greatest where prize money relative to costs, likelihood of public interest and attention, and financial resources of tennis events are lowest. It added that the launch of online gaming and the sale of official live results of tennis matches have worsened the problem. Such results are published on the internet and social media as play continues. The writers of the report added that there are no simple solutions, but they want to address and limit the betting markets that ultimately drive the problem. The report said many at the lowest level of tennis struggle to cover the costs of competing. This, the report said, made the idea of placing bets on matches more appealing to players. Many of them had knowledge of match fixing. A study of 3,200 players found that 16% said they knew players placing bets on matches, while 11% knew of inside information being provided. Tennis's governing organizations have promised to enact the report's final findings after a period of discussion.
An incredible player came from Japan, a fan of the Los Angeles Angels said recently. The player is Shohei Ohtani, and he has gained a lot of attention since he joined Major League Baseball in America. Major League Baseball teams usually select a player to be a pitcher or a batter. Ohtani is special because he can play both at the highest level. Ohtani was already famous when he was in high school. Against the best pitcher in the high school national tournament, he hit a home run. Before turning 18, he recorded the fastest pitch in the history of Japanese high school baseball at 160 kilometers an hour. Very few major league pitchers in America can throw that fast. After high school, Ohtani was the first player selected by the Nippon Ham Fighters, a Japanese professional team, in 2012. By 2016, Ohtani excelled as both a pitcher and a batter for the team in Sapporo. He hit 22 home runs as a batter and had 10 wins as a pitcher while striking out 174 opposing batters. As a pitcher, Ohtani also threw the fastest pitch in the history of Nippon professional baseball at 165 kilometers an hour. He then led the Nippon Ham Fighters to the championship of the Nippon Professional Baseball League. At the end of every season in Japan, sports reporters choose the best nine. The award is given to the best player at each position in the league. Ohtani won the best nine award as a designated hitter and as a pitcher. And he also won the league's Most Valuable Player award. On December 8, 2017, Shohei Ohtani joined the Los Angeles Angels of Major League Baseball in the U.S. He chose the team over the well-known New York Yankees and Boston Red Sox. In his first three home games as the Angels' designated hitter, Ohtani hit three home runs. He became the first Angels rookie to do so. As a pitcher, Ohtani won his first game, striking out six batters in six innings on April 1st. Then, on April 8th, he had a perfect game through six and one-third innings before permitting a hit. In baseball, when a pitcher does not permit any runs, hits, or errors, he is said to have pitched a perfect game. When he played in Japan, some Japanese fans compared Ohtani to Babe Ruth. Ruth is one of the greatest American professional baseball players. He began his major league career as a pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, but played in the outfield for the New York Yankees. Now, many people in the United States have started to compare Ohtani to Babe Ruth. Baseball is one of the most popular sports in Japan. More than 20 million people attend professional baseball games in Japan each year. Now, Major League Baseball is getting more popular among Japanese baseball fans. One of the reasons is that more star Japanese baseball players, like Ohtani, are playing in the United States. Ryohei Takahashi is a Japanese baseball fan. He especially likes Major League Baseball. These days, he gets up very early in the morning to watch Ohtani's games. He sometimes needs to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. There is a 16-hour time difference between Japan and the U.S. West Coast. Riohe told VOA that he did not expect that Ohtani would be such a good hitter. He thought that the Japanese star might instead mainly pitch. But I am glad to watch his two-way success, he said. Riohe added that he is already playing an important role for the Angels. Ohtani will be able to continue to have a big impact on the rest of the season. I am hoping that his successful story continues and he becomes an MVP candidate. Shunsuke Ijima is a Japanese university student. He watched Ohtani's near-perfect game in Anaheim, California. He told VOA, "When I entered the stadium in Anaheim, I saw many people wearing Ohtani t-shirts. During the game, the spectators gave a standing ovation for his wonderful pitching. Ohtani is a treasure of Japan. I am proud to be from the same country as him." Japanese media have closely covered Ohtani and his games. When the New York Yankees played against the Angels in late April, they were hoping for a dream matchup between Ohtani as a batter against the Japanese pitcher Masahiro Tanaka. In his first time batting against the Yankees, the 23-year-old Ohtani hit a home run against pitcher Luis Severino, but he sprained his ankle later in the game. So the dream matchup will have to wait for another day. I'm Mario Ritter.
For the first time ever, astronomers have observed the birth of a galaxy cluster known as a protocluster. The event, billions of light years away, could form one of the largest known structures in today's universe. Using the most powerful telescopes on Earth, the scientists have observed a group of 14 galaxies in the early stages of crashing into one another. The galaxies are forming stars at a rate 1,000 times faster than our own Milky Way galaxy. Yet all 14 galaxies fit into an area just about 4 times the size of our galaxy. The gathering of galaxies is 12.4 billion light-years away from Earth. Because of the length of time it takes for light to travel, the scientists are actually looking back in history. The protocluster, named SPT2349-56, appeared when the universe was about a tenth of its current age. They say it happened 1.4 billion years after the Big Bang. The Big Bang is the explosive force that gave rise to the universe about 13.8 billion years ago. Chris Hayward is a scientist with the Flatiron Institute in New York. He told the Simons Foundation, "This is the missing link in our understanding of how clusters form." The astronomers reported this galactic gathering in the journal Nature in late April. Scott Chapman of Dalhousie University in Canada is one of the authors of the report. Chapman, Hayward, Tim Miller of Yale University, and others observed the protocluster using the South Pole Telescope in Antarctica. Chapman said how the group of galaxies got so big so fast is a bit of a mystery. It just hit you in the face because all of a sudden there are all these galaxies there, Chapman said. We went from 3 to 14 in one fell swoop. It instantly became obvious this was a very interesting, massive structure forming and not just a flash in the pan. The protocluster was formed before the more mature galaxy clusters seen in the modern universe. That makes the protocluster an excellent testbed for learning more about how present-day clusters formed and evolved. I'm Pete Musto.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the 1890s, the American people were deeply divided over the nation's money system. Should the United States support its currency with gold or with gold and silver? The question became the main issue in the presidential election of 1896. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell the story of that election.
Many Americans wanted a gold standard. They said the United States should support its money only with gold. A gold standard, they said, would keep the value of the dollar high. These people were called gold bugs. Most were businessmen, bankers, and investors. Many other Americans wanted the United States to support its money with both gold and silver. They thought the value of the dollar was too high. A high dollar, they said, drove down prices for agricultural products. A silver standard would lower the value of the dollar. These people were called silverites. Most were farmers, laborers, and owners of small businesses.
The debate over gold and silver was especially important because of an economic depression that began in the United States in 1893. Thousands of banks and businesses closed. Millions of men lost their jobs. Foreign investors withdrew their money from America. Americans who had money were afraid to invest it. Many people believed the depression would end if the government issued more paper money backed by silver. President Grover Cleveland disagreed, and he opposed any legislation that might threaten the gold standard. He noted that every major nation supported its paper money with gold. The United States would be foolish, he said, not to do the same. It could not stand apart from the world's other money systems.
President Cleveland belonged to the Democratic Party. By 1896, many Democrats had become silverites. They gained control of party organizations in several western and southern states. They called Cleveland a traitor to his party and to the American people. They did not want him to be the party's candidate in that year's election. The Republican Party also was divided over the issue of gold and silver. Some members from silver mining states in the West left the party. Others remained in the party but gave support secretly to silverite Democrats. Republicans had done well in the congressional elections of 1894. They won control of both the Senate and House of Representatives. Party leaders were sure a Republican could be elected president in 1896. The most likely candidate appeared to be Governor William McKinley of Ohio.
McKinley was, in fact, nominated on the first ballot at the Republican convention in St. Louis, Missouri. The Democratic Party held its nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois. The most likely candidate was Congressman Richard Bland of Missouri. A majority of convention delegates, however, were silverites, and they expected to nominate a silverite candidate. Supporters of President Cleveland wanted to test the silverites' strength. They demanded a debate on the gold-silver issue. Several men spoke in support of President Cleveland and the gold standard. Several spoke in support of silver. The last to speak was Congressman William Jennings Bryan of Nebraska. He had led an unsuccessful fight in Congress to keep America using silver.
Bryan spoke emotionally during the convention debate. He said he represented America's farmers, laborers, and small businessmen who wanted a silver standard. Bryan ended his speech with a line that became famous during the campaign. It called to mind the torture and death of Jesus Christ. Bryan said gold supporters could not force their money system on silver supporters. "You shall not," he said, "crucify mankind upon a cross of gold." With those words, William Jennings Bryan won the nomination away from Congressman Bland. He would be the Democrats' presidential candidate. He was just 36 years old.
A number of Democrats refused to accept Bryan as their candidate. They withdrew from the Chicago convention and held one of their own. They called themselves National Democrats. They nominated candidates for president and vice president, but they did not win many votes in the election. America's third party at that time, the People's Party, had a difficult decision to make. Populists, as they were called, agreed with silverite Democrats that the United States should have a silver standard. So some believed the party should unite with the Democrats to support Democratic candidate William Jennings Bryan. If they did not, Republican William McKinley was sure to win the election. Other populists feared that such a union would mean the end of the People's Party. The populists solved the problem at their nominating convention. Like the Democrats, they chose Bryan to be their candidate for president. But they chose a different candidate for vice president. In this way, William Jennings Bryan was able to run for president at the head of two separate political parties.
There was a great difference in the way the two presidential candidates campaigned. William McKinley refused to travel. Instead of going to the voters, he let the voters come to him, and they did. Railroad companies supported McKinley. They ran special trains to his home in Ohio. The trip was free. Each trip was the same. A band met the train and marched with the group to McKinley's home. McKinley came outside to hear a statement of support from the leader of the group. Then he made a short speech and shook hands. The group left, and another one came. On one day of the campaign, McKinley met 30 groups this way. That was more than 80,000 people.
While McKinley stayed at home, William Jennings Bryan traveled. He visited 27 states and spoke to 5 million people. Bryan explained that he had to travel because the Democratic Party did not have enough money to campaign in other ways. Bryan spent $650,000 on his campaign. McKinley spent $3.5 million. Bryan's main campaign idea was that the gold standard would ruin America's economy. McKinley's main campaign idea was that silver money would ruin the economy. For a time, Bryan's campaign seemed to be succeeding. More and more people promised to support him. Then, in the final weeks before Election Day, the situation began to change. The depressed economy showed signs of improving. The price of wheat rose for the first time in several years. Perhaps, people said, it was wrong to blame gold for the Depression. Perhaps, they said, the ideas of William Jennings Bryan were wrong.
On Election Day, it was soon clear who had won. McKinley received 270 electoral votes. Bryan received 176. Bryan congratulated McKinley. Then he told his supporters to begin getting ready for the next presidential election. "If we are right about silver," Bryan said, "we will win 4 years from now."
McKinley's election seemed to give new life to the American economy. Within a month, a business publication reported that buying and selling had increased greatly. It said demand for goods had led to the reopening of factories closed during the Depression. At the same time, new supplies of gold were discovered in Alaska, Australia, and South Africa. The extra gold increased the supply of money in the same way silver would have increased it. Taxes on imported goods rose to almost 60%. Under this protective tariff, American industry grew fast. The Depression ended.
The economic depression of the 1890s forced Americans to worry first about developments at home. But there were a number of international developments then which involved the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.